Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers Journey Through the Wormhole with Cork, Dax, and their good friends Tom and Harry. Join us as we make our way through episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Your hosts for today are my fellow Trek actors, Armin Shimerman, Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, Garrett Wong.
Hi, everybody. For the complete and exciting and amazing and extra special version of this podcast, check us out at patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers. Sign up to become a patron today, and you can get tons and tons of amazing bonus material. Welcome, everybody.
Welcome. And I just have to ask Garrett to do the Delta Flyers sign again.
Yeah,
he's got a Delta Flyers Journey Through the Wormhole.
That tickles me.
Which was Hawaiian to you before, which it is kind of like a Hawaiian move.
It is.
But like I will say, gentlemen, that was when you guys all went, hi, it just reminded me I was on a flight. This lady took her three-year-old daughter to the washroom in the front of the plane. And as they're walking back, this little girl had to do this to every row. Hi, 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 hi. She was just walking down saying hi to each person on every aisle seat. And the mom was like, okay, okay. You don't have to say hi to every single one of them. And she just kept going. Yeah, so that was like our highs in the beginning.
You know what it reminded me of when Armin said hi and then I said hi? When I was a kid, I used to love the original Mickey Mouse Club. When they would introduce them, hi, I'm Bobby, or I'm... Yeah, felt like we were doing the Mickey Mouse Club intro.
Okay. I saw a play yesterday. It's called Crevasse, where Disney was the lead character. And these two actors, Leo Marx and Ann Noble, extraordinary acting. I've seen lots of Broadway shows. I've seen lots of major regional theater. I've never seen acting like I saw yesterday.
Wow.
And Leo played Disney, and it was incredible.
And it's a new play?
It's a new play, and it's at the Victory Theater. And if anyone's, I think they're probably closed by now, but extraordinary performances,
wow. a
level of performance that all of us would try to strive for.
Wow. That's a very impressive recommendation. Wow.
What's the name of the
you mentioned Disney, it's called Crevasse.
Crevasse.
And it's written by a man named Tom Jacobson. I believe I have the name correct. Mm. And this was a very intellectual that's about what's the German filmmaker, the Nazi filmmaker,
Riefenstahl.
That's it. Yeah,
Riefenstahl. Lenny Riefenstahl.
Lenny Riefenstahl.
Yeah.
So that was the female. All of them played several parts, but Anne played that brilliantly, and Leo played Disney brilliantly.
Wow.
And I wouldn't rave about this, except I've never seen acting like that.
Wow.
I know. I want to go see
it. And it's closed?
Well, it's not closed now, but by now it's closed because we're so far
by January the 4th, it'll be closed.
Yeah.
And the lady who runs the theater, she and I went to college together. But it's her theater, but I believe it's a rental. And it's extraordinary. Two character play where they play several characters. And oh my God, I'm gobsmacked by that.
What's the name of it again? Crevasse?
Crevasse.
Yeah.
It's very heady and very moving and very surprising.
All right, it's time to say happy birthday to some people. So let's start off with Jenna Appleton. Jenna Appleton, happy birthday. December 31st is your birthday.
Happy turn of the year and your birthday.
Yes, happy New Year's Eve and happy birthday,
exactly.
Jenna. We also have Rebecca Leary on January 1st. Happy New Year's to Rebecca and happy birthday, Rebecca.
Turning a new leaf, Rebecca. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Rebecca, January 1st. Also on January 2nd, we have Francesca Garibaldi. Happy birthday, Francesca.
Happy birthday, Francesca. Many happy returns.
Happy birthday, Francesca. We also have Mike Goo on January 4th. Happy birthday, Mike.
Happy birthday, Mike.
Happy birthday, Mike. And finally, we have Mickey T, the next day after Mike Goo, on January 5th. Happy birthday, Mickey.
Happy birthday, Mickey.
Happy birthday, Mickey.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, it's time for our poetry synopsis, starting with Robbie's limerick. Can't wait. Sir.
Here we go. My poetry synopsis for Civil Defense. A Cardassian alert is a surprise. It looks like the whole station's about to vaporize. With a complicated scheme, they all work as a team. In the end, it's okay. No one dies.
Nice.
I beg to differ. Some people did.
Oh, yes. Oh. The red shirt on the bridge.
Oh, that one guy.
Yes, yeah. Enough. Oh, he got vaporized, too.
No, Robbie, you should have changed it. In the end, it's okay. One guy dies. That's what you should have said.
Only one guy dies.
One guy dies. It's okay. Only one guy dies.
You know, when we were airing, we got a horrible award as the most lethal show on TV. They said more people died on our show than any other program on television.
Really? Wow.
Oh, well, man.
Star Trek is always blowing up alien ships and planets.
DS9 takes the cake on that one. Wow. More than Voyager and TNG and everyone else.
But, yeah. Wow. And there's one scene where I go, really? Really? You're going to risk all those people's lives? Okay.
Here's my haiku. Ore worker revolt. Ducat arrives, wants to deal. Cisco saves them all.
Nice.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Doesn't he always save them all? Doesn't he always?
Yes, exactly. He does. What kind of etymology do you have for us today, Armin?
Well, I looked up the word civil, which is interesting to me because it's from the Latin. This isn't from the old French, but from the Latin.
Okay.
Civilis. And if it means of or pertaining to citizens, there are dozens of variations of definitions listed in the Oxford English Dictionary about civil. I've written down a couple. Of or belonging to citizens, constituting, mm-hmm. Consisting of citizens of men dwelling together in a community as in civil society. Another definition is civil, educated, well-bred, refined, polished, polite. And I want to talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
And another one I have is polite or courteous in behavior to others, the ordinary minimum standard of courtesy. All of those, I think, apply to this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. The Cardassians were not very courteous to the people they gave this place to.
No. Not very civil at all.
No.
And there's a Shakespearean joke where Shakespeare, because it's probably pronounced the same way, civil is pronounced the same way as Seville, which is a city in Spain.
Oh, right.
As something as a Seville orange, one of the characters says.
Oh, how funny. Who worked on this episode, Garrett?
No, I was just looking at the definition of civil defense itself. Civil defense or civil protection is an effort to protect the citizens or of a state from human-made and natural disasters. That's just something that just popped up when I was...
This isn't human-made, but it's Cardassian-made.
Yes.
It is.
It is Ducat made.
It is Ducat.
It is.
Before we get into credits, I'm just going to give a full disclosure here.
What are you going to do? What?
This is so far my least favorite episode of your show.
What the?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. And I'm not going to whine about it the whole time. I just want to get that out there so I don't feel like I'm holding on to.
Well, now I feel like you just gave a spoiler on your own opinion in a way. Why are you telling us this now?
Well, I want to, because I think it's important. Because as we go through, my thoughts were just like,
all right. Can I just read this little tidbit? This episode Please. Had an extremely difficult gestation. According to Ira Stephen Bear, it was one of those backbreaking, horrible, horrible experiences. Although he does acknowledge that it was terrific at the end. The original pitch was by Mike Crone and was intended as a bottle show. And while the basic man against machine element of the plot was fine, the problem, according to Ron Moore, was in trying to find a way to make the Jeopardy intriguing, to find the inner story. By the time of production, virtually every writer on the staff had a go at the script. So this is one
it
of those.
It felt that way to me.
Yes.
All over the place.
Yeah. But every single draft was rejected by Michael Piller. According to Bear, Piller called him at 8 a.m. on a Monday morning to tell him, I hate to say this, Ira, but I'm not buying any of it. It's not working.
I'm with Michael.
Okay. In the end, after much work, the staff finally got together a script, which Piller approved, and the episode was greenlit. But even then, there were more problems. According to Bear, the writing process turned out as painful and disgusting as we thought it would be. However, he does acknowledge that in the end, it turned out solid with some nice twists and some great stuff for Garrick and Ducat and the paired up teams. So there's already issues right off the bat.
I could feel it. I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
And from the performance level, I had some real problems with it.
It was hard for me to even kind of evaluate that because I was not buying a lot of the Jeopardy that was going on. It just seemed arbitrary sometimes and not well explained and seemed like there were ways around it. And I don't know.
Okay. Yeah,
this one was tough for me.
All right. But now that we know that, that's difficult for you. I wanted to just give the flip side of the coin. This is a positive. This is a positive take on this episode. Bo-Yeon Kim, who is a writer that when Aaron Eisenberg and I had a podcast together, we interviewed her for Alpha Quadrant. Mm-hmm. Bo-Yeon Kim is a writer on Discovery. And Bo-Yeon said, there's always that one episode where everything just clicks for you. The one that makes you realize when you're helplessly in love with a show. This was that episode for me with DS9. It had a wonderful balance of action and comedy, vaguely disguised as a bottle show, for which I have a great affinity, through which somehow every character was given an opportunity to shine. It also brilliantly utilized the space station and its notorious history as a Cardassian station, creating, quite literally, a ticking time bomb. So that's one person who loves this show.
Yeah, I've heard anecdotally that the fans really love this episode, that it's a very popular episode, actually. But I didn't quite connect with it that way. So,
understood. Yeah. Understood. So
it may explain the problem that you said that Ira and Michael had with it. It may explain why I have this script that ends at Act 3 and it goes no further.
So that's explain to everybody that's the script you found of this episode.
Yes, it's the original script I got as an actor for the next show for Civil Defense. And it only goes to Act 3. This never happens. We always get all five acts, but this script only goes to Act 3.
Wow.
And maybe because they were still working on it, even as they were handing the scripts out to the actors.
Yeah.
That's what I think happened. Yeah. All right. Well, this was written by Mike Crone, directed by Reza Badii. And here's a quick comment from David Livingston, who said, cool episode. And poor Reza had no time to prep. No prep time.
Because they hadn't written it.
Nothing written. Can you imagine that, Robbie? Just explain to people how difficult that is if you're coming
It's very difficult. Yeah. I will use a sidebar to explain it. I did a show called Medium years ago.
I remember that
and
show.
Yeah, very popular show, good show. And when I came in, actually Renee Echevarria was on the staff of Medium, and I had known him peripherally because of Star Trek. And he pulled me in his office on my first day of prep and he said, "Let me just explain how the show works." And I think Renee wrote my script technically, I think. he goes, "We write a script and then we hand it to the showrunner, Glenn Gordon Caron was his name, very famous showrunner who created Moonlighting." He said, "We give it to Glenn, and then we won't really hear anything until maybe the day before you start shooting, where he'll start sending out pages." He said, so don't fall in love with the script that you've got in your hand because it's going to change. And he was absolutely right. The night before we started filming, we got complete rewrites for the next day's work on stage. And then that pattern continued through the entire shoot. We would get pages either the night before for the morning's work. Sometimes we'd be shooting in the morning. I remember once we were shooting on stage in the morning, we got pages for the afternoon. He had written a scene in a coffee shop cafe, sidewalk cafe. We literally went to the scenic department and got some tables and chairs, set them outside of the stage office doors, and created this thing for the afternoon's work because the scene wasn't written until 11 a.m. So it does happen. It's painful. It's not fair to all the other departments that contribute. They can't do their best work. Locations and art department and costume department
And acting.
and
It takes a little
actors.
time to memorize lines.
Patricia Arquette on that show, who had most of the work, was just beside herself sometimes. But yeah, it happens rarely. On Star Trek, our show, Voyager, they were really good about getting scripts out, I think, at least in time for us to prepare the story and, and absorb it a little bit. But yeah, some shows are really bad. This sounds like this was that situation. Yeah.
I didn't know that you directed that
Yeah.
series. How was she to work with,
She was
Patricia?
awesome. She was awesome. And the actor that played her husband, Jake Weber had gone to acting school a couple, two years behind me. So I had met him briefly a little bit at acting school. So I knew Jake. Yeah. It was fine. I did a 3D episode of that show. So all of her visions, I don't know, she was a medium, was the concept. And she would have these visions of solving crimes. And in this episode, her visions were in shot in 3D, and you had to put on glasses, and they gave them out at 7-Elevens or something. And so there was a lot to prep, and not getting our pages when you're shooting 3D elements, special, a sweeps episode, I think it was. It was a big episode for them. And yeah, we got pages the day of. In the middle of shooting, you're getting whole new scenes. Yeah, crazy.
I had first seen Patricia Arquette in that film True Romance,
Yeah.
1993, with Christian Slater. Fell in love with that character, played by her.
Yeah,
And
she's great.
during, I don't know if you remember this, but during the filming of Voyager, I crashed my car. Do you remember this? My M3 was in the shop for
Vaguely,
eight. Oh,
vaguely.
okay. Well, I got into this massive accident because I saw who I thought was her
Patricia
drive,
Arquette,
yes,
and
literally.
you
And
looked the.
I was like, I'm gonna go and turn around. So I was getting in the left turn lane, and this other car came right in, just knocked, the bejesus out of me right
So
there.
Patricia
Patricia
Arquette
Arquette was the
almost
reason
killed
why,
you.
I almost died. So, because I thought I saw her and well, someone that looked like her character from the movie, basically. It
That's
wasn't
funny.
her. I was like, I'm gonna go see who that is, and I'm gonna get over that. And I went, yeah,
That was a
so
great film.
it was a good film.
This director,
Reza,
Reza?
yeah, I'm gonna
Reza?
say Reza, yeah. All right,
All right,
guest
so
stars,
Reza,
yep,
guest
Reza
stars,
Badi,
yes.
yes. Andrew Robinson is Garrick, of course. Mark Alamo is Gold Dukat. Danny Goldring is Kel. That's Leggett Kel. That would be that final
Video.
automated video, basically. Danny Goldring also appeared as Chief Burke in DS9, Nor the Battle to the Strong, a future episode, as Carr in Voyager, The Killing Game, and The Killing Game Part Two. Robbie, we've worked with Danny Goldring, and also as the Nausicaan captain in Enterprise episode Fortunate Son, and also as the Takrit captain in Enterprise episode The Catwalk.
Nice.
And Goldring guest starred in The Invisible Man in 2001 with Armin.
I want to say something about Star Trek and what you just said,
Yeah.
Garrett, which is that one of the things Star Trek did that no other show did, at least in my career or time in Hollywood, is that they would hire an actor to play different parts. It didn't matter. In most shows, if you've played a part, no matter how big or how small it is, for the most part, you don't get hired again unless
Yeah.
that character comes back.
Yeah.
They just know we've already used him or her. We're not going to use them again. Star Trek allowed actors to play multiple roles. And I am one of the proud people who had that opportunity. I went from a small role as a prop, a talking prop in my first appearance on Next Generation. And then 2 weeks later,
Wow.
was asked to play a totally different role, the first Ferengi.
That's amazing.
Thank you, Star Trek, for having that policy.
Yeah, very rare. Most shows, you're absolutely right. One and done, you know.
Armin, what is this Invisible Man project that you
It
did?
was a series, and I that was I think it lasted for maybe 2 seasons, maybe three, can't remember. Shot in San Diego. I played a villain who was the nemesis for the Invisible Man.
Who played the Invisible Man?
His name was not
Household name? No.
it
Okay.
wasn't a household name. Vincent was the actor's first name, and I don't remember his last name, and I should. He was very nice. The set was very, very nice, and I had a lot of makeup, not prosthetic makeup, but regular, but a lot of because I was slightly grotesque. I think that's why they hired me. And I was blind, so
Whoa.
I had to wear white contact lenses, and I think I did about three or four episodes.
I gotta say, I have no recollection of this series whatsoever. So I thought it was a feature film. Robbie, do you remember
No.
this TV
I do
show? Well, the
remember
one
it
I did
because
was it
was a TV series.
I remember the TV series because I auditioned for it or maybe got an episode and then couldn't do it or something. I do remember.
On Star Trek, we weren't allowed to say anything that wasn't on the page. It was if you didn't get it right, you had to do it over.
That's right.
These guys ad-libbed all the time. And the first episode I did, I was in a chair tied to a chair with my arms tied behind my back, and Paul w went off on some bizarre thing about, I can't remember, some Italian cooking, and he went on for like 2 minutes, and finally the director yelled cut, and he said, "Whose line is it?" I said, "It's mine, but I don't know how I say my line after what he just said."
After what you just, that's
You're like, I
funny.
come from Star Trek production, Star Trek
Exactly.
episodes.
We
We don't
don't do this. We
go do this
don't.
at all. That's
And
great.
then, and many times on that show, I either would be part of just an ad lib session, or I would sometimes watch the show and I go, "That's an ad lib. That wasn't written.
That's
We knew."
funny.
And it wasn't just a word or two. It was a speech. It was two speeches. It was three speech. And because Paul started it, Vincent started to do it too. The writers must have been pulling their hair out.
How funny.
That'd be interesting if you do a show where everything is ad-libbed, where you just ad-lib the entire thing. Just
Whose
have
line is
fun.
it anyway? Isn't that an ad-lib
Yeah,
show?
I
Pretty
love that
much.
show. I love it.
All right,
All
Robbie,
right.
shall we jump into this
Let's jump
one?
into the story. So we start off in this ore processing unit, two stories high, big chute running down the middle of the room. I love this big set. It was beautiful. Do you recall where that might have been filmed, Armin? No. I wondered if they repurposed like the Bajoran temple or something.
No, I think I don't
No.
think so
Okay.
because it was two stories. I think it might have had to have been on our extra stage.
The far the one you had to walk to.
The Planet Hell
The Planet
stage.
Hell stage, yeah.
Yeah. Well, beautiful set. We see O'Brien's trying to convert some Cardassian ore processor, technology into a deuterium refinery, and Jake's there helping. He's deleting some files from the old thing. Sisko arrives. He's like, "You gonna make it for dinner?" So obviously Jake's been there a long time. Dad's come to make sure he eats.
He shows up like a ninja, though, doesn't he? Just like,
In
hey,
like in the shadows.
just like,
Yeah.
where did he come from? Was there
I
a
couldn't.
secret sliding door? I don't know.
I suppose it could have been materialized. He could have
Oh,
just beamed in.
site to site transport. Okay, true. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, he
Solved.
shows up in the shadows. And then Miles, just before they're about to leave, Miles sees this unknown file on the computer, tries to transfer it to the main computer in ops. Take a look at it tomorrow, he says. This alarm goes off. Suddenly the doors slam. They're locked inside. The computer thinks it's like a Bajoran worker revolt. And then this message from Gul Dukat comes up. What does he say, Gul Dukat?
Well, I've got it right here. I just have to wait. Your attempt to seize control of this facility is going to fail. You are valuable workers, and we wish you no harm. However, if you do not return control of the unit to your Cardassian supervisors, we will be forced to take action. Consider your options carefully. Your lives depend on it. You have 8 minutes to make your decision.
Wow.
Okay. I loved Golda Kutt's, Mark Alaimo's voice, his pitch, his tone in all of these messages.
Yeah.
It's so kind and just it's gentle almost the way he's speaking, which is so contrary to what's about to happen, right?
Yeah,
As
what
we go
he's
in
saying,
further.
yes.
Yeah. And then
yeah.
there's a comment later, we haven't even got to it, where Sisko was like, oh. He's like, I can't stand that voice or something. I'm like, no, he's being pretty nice. I don't think that voice is that grating to me. I think it's a very pleasant voice.
Mark always thought he was the hero of the show. He did.
I believe
did he
it.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And
well,
that's
I
what
think
makes his performance so really wonderful. He never sees himself as a villain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the best performances of villains when they're not playing the bad guy. They're
Right.
playing the hero. It's
Yeah.
great. It's a smart choice. Well, they're locked inside. We come back after the opening credits. Miles is trying to force this. The door's open. No luck at all there. They call, I think they call Kira or
no,
no,
they
Kira,
call
con-
no,
Kira
Kira,
calls.
Kira,
Yeah.
Kira calls Cisco.
Oh, Ops calls Cisco. That's
yeah.
right.
Kira calls Cisco. Basically, Cisco says, we're trapped in here. Can you beam us out? They try to beam him out, but they don't have this Cardassian security code to do it. Then Odo calls Ops, and Odo's trying to override with his code and security office, but he doesn't have high enough clearance. I love this when Quark comes in. Quark comes in. He saw the message. He's very unhappy because his customers are nervous. They're just not spending money because Dukat's message has got them all freaked out.
Yeah.
Odo says, can I help? And Odo's like, well, if you have a level 7 security clearance or something. Quark happens to have a level 7 security clearance.
Well, I have up to 7,
Yeah.
He said, well, and Odo says, I only have up to 6. Well, if you want to negotiate.
Exactly. Very funny. There is some funny stuff in here.
There is.
I will admit, starting out with Jeopardy like this, I didn't
yeah.
have a problem yet. It's just
right.
that it seems to just tread water a lot. And
okay.
there's not much of a lesson for anyone. I'm not sure in the end, like, what is the takeaway that anyway, that's I'll frame up my criticism.
And maybe now's my chance to say this. I think the reason why the emergency doesn't seem like an emergency is that the Starfleet actors never play scared. They never
Yeah.
play that that this is going to be the end of their lives. They never play that. And
Yeah.
it may be that the director didn't tell them they had to do that. And because they don't feel like they're in dire trouble, I never felt like they were in dire trouble.
Yeah.
They just never played it. They may have had some inclination. Okay, well, we
some
have to do this.
Concern, but it didn't
but
feel like
it was just this Starfleet assurance that everything is going to turn out right. It's one of the things I don't like about Starfleet is that they're not human. They're not human.
Yeah,
they're godlike.
Yes.
Okay.
That's my problem.
Well,
yeah.
okay. Armin, how if you're talking about Meisner based acting,
yeah.
where you're listening to, where you listen literally to what the words are being spoken to you, it doesn't matter how they're spoken to you. So if the other actor is the shittiest actor on the planet, doesn't matter. You're just listening to the words. And that's kind of how I was in watching this episode. I glossed over the fact that the Starfleet personnel were not in any major jeopardy. It didn't look like they were in because I just listened to what I was hearing, which is
sure.
Neurocene gas is going to come in. Everyone's going to die. So I bought it. I bought it 1000% because I don't, I'm not going to let my opinion be swayed by whether or not an actor portrayed peril or not.
It's so hard for me to watch. I don't know for you guys, but for me to watch episodes and not have my actor brain or my
director brain
or my
yeah.
producer brain or even
yeah.
my writer brain. Like, I just can't not look at it and go, oh, why didn't they do this?
Or, yeah.
I love when I get caught up in it, when I am transported by the performance and the writing and the execution where I forget, where I suspend my disbelief completely because I'm so moved by the story and performance. This didn't do that for me, this particular episode. I was constantly aware of what I saw were missed opportunities, I guess.
Well, then, Robbie, maybe you need to watch it 3 times in a row. First time is to be critical as a director. Second time, critical as an actor. Third time, to watch it as a fan.
Yeah.
That's always the
I mean, I wanted to feel like Die Hard in this. I wanted to feel like, you know, how Die Hard's got comedy, but it's got jeopardy and it's got emotion in the end.
Yeah.
Die Hard is almost a perfect movie to me. It's so good. And I wanted this to have those elements, and it attempted now and then, but it just in the end didn't feel like a full meal to me.
And come on. We knew the station was never going to blow up.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's the third season. It's the station is not going to blow up. Yeah. Enterprise could blow up. The Enterprise could blow up and they could replace it, but you can't replace DS9.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like the scene with Odo and Quark. In fact, that was some of my favorite stuff, honestly, Armin. It's not just because you're here. I think you guys didn't have a lot to do in this episode, but I enjoyed watching your stuff and it did feel like there was some nice.
But because we were trapped together, it was the first time in my memory, if I look back, where I actually thought, oh, this is an episode where Renee and I can have a good time together. We weren't just passing or yelling at each other or carping at each other, but we actually got scenes to play where we were, you know, in jeopardy together. And I rather enjoyed that. This was like a first for me, or at least an increase in the relationship between Odo and Quark.
Yeah. And I think, you know, having Odo just recently gone through his discovery of changelings and the founders and all of that, I think his character has changed enough that it helps that relationship with Quark. He's got a bit more of self-awareness and assurance or something, or just, you know, it was nice to see. I thought your work together was really good.
Thank you.
When Odo tells Quark at the very, very end, and he's like, well, who are the other people that are more devious than me? He's like, well, Gayla, your cousin, this. He starts going through all these names of all these people.
Rom.
Yeah. Your fifth cousin, whatever. I mean, just random names. It was very
funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From security, we go back to the ore processing unit. Cisco's trying to access the door on this tall stack of crates. I was very nervous for Avery Brooks up there. It seemed very high. And then he had to climb down. I was like, oh, I don't know. It was my actor nervousness.
See, there was jeopardy for there. For
there
you.
Was jeopardy. There was jeopardy. Yeah, it was more about Avery Brooks, the human being. Is he going to fall or slip off that thing? That's almost a stunt. It was so high. It really was.
Yeah.
It was risky, but he can't open this escape hatch. Another Dukat video comes up. They've got to surrender or they're going to be gassed with this neurocene gas. So Sisko has a clever idea. He tells the computer that he's the leader of this rebellion and that they surrender. They all surrender. And Dukat says, smart choice. So Cardassian security is going to come get you. So it's bought him a little time.
Right.
Then they're looking at this tube up the middle of it's like a chute for the ore processing. And they say, well, we can't fit in that chute. You know, where does it go? Maybe we can get out, but we can't fit. And Jake says, I can fit in there. So they pull off the hatch. He climbs up and around. Sisko's kind of banging on the wall to tell him where to go. And he does open the panel. And just in time as the gas comes out, Jake opens
just
the hatch.
Just in time. Just in
time. Yeah. You see down as the gas is going around the floor and Miles is the last one out. But I had an issue because so they say to this tube, well, we can't fit in there. Jake's got to do it. And yet it's the same tube that the three of them come out in the next scene. Like
time
we see them.
Really?
It's the same size tube.
Okay.
And I was just like, you should have made, not that I want to put Ciroc in a tiny tube, but it felt like it should have been a different piece of scenic material. And they just used the same plastic conventional tube. So it was stuff like that where I was like, you're just.
And
Yeah.
when the gas is coming up, I'm thinking, and no one is affected by the gas.
Yeah.
Yes, O'Brien is the last one in. Shouldn't some of that gas have gotten into the passageway that they've opened? Shouldn't there
Yeah.
be some coughing? Shouldn't there be some reaction to the gas? Again, the Jeopardy just, it wasn't real to me.
You noticed the gas. I noticed the tube sizes. It ultimately felt like it wasn't real. Exactly. Well, they get out, go back up to ops. Dax is trying to bypass the security program that's been started when suddenly an alarm comes on and the computer says the workers have escaped the processing unit and now a stationwide counterinsurgency protocol has been activated. Doors slam on in ops, doors slam everywhere. Basically, the whole station is in lockdown. And Dukat comes back with his Mr. He's got like Mr. Rogers messages. It's like
Attention, Bajoran workers. I will not allow this rebellion to succeed. If you do not surrender immediately, I will be forced to kill every Bajoran on this station. It's like he's smiling through every word that he's saying. I love it.
Mark doesn't want to play the villain.
No,
I
he doesn't
know.
want
You're
to play the
right.
villain. That's why he's so damn good. We love him.
And let's remember what he just says there. We will kill every Bajoran on the station. And we're talking about a lot of people on this station. We don't get to see them a lot, but we understand that there are a lot of Bajorans on this station. And yet we never see any of them, really, except once brief moment. And actually, if I'm correct, there was a scene with some of these civilians, and I think it was cut. I'm trying to remember whether I saw it or not.
Oh,
I'm
in the
looking at
script, the three act script that you have.
in the three act script I have, there's a the civilians actually have something going on, and then that was cut so that the episode looks like it's only a jeopardy to our series regulars, not to the hundreds, if not thousands, of people on the station.
Like, for example, if the opening teaser had been a Bajoran holiday being celebrated on the promenade or something, and you see everyone celebrating, and then this thing happens, and the goal is we've got to save all of these thousands of Bajorans that are celebrating this holiday today or something, it would have made them more heroic if they had a purpose outside of themselves. Yeah, it didn't feel like anyone else
Yeah,
was in
for the
jeopardy
most part, they're
except.
saving their own skins.
Yes, exactly.
And we're not really involved with the hundreds, again, thousands of people that are on this station.
All right. Well, ops is screwed because they're locked down and door slammed shut. Bashir says, "Now what?" I like that. Back in the ore loading bay, so not the main place where they escaped the gas, but now they're coming out of this tube. And that's where I was like, "Oh, it's the same tube that they said they couldn't fit in." Anyway, they climb out of the tube. They're in this new area. It looks like an old-fashioned, like miner's little cart, on the track that you see the classic iconic sort of mining trolley or whatever those are called.
Trolley, I think that's the right word, yeah.
There's one of those right there. They're in a loading dock for this ore, I guess. It's a dead end. Their comm badges don't work. Sisko tries the door, but it's locked. They can't get out. "What do we do now?" says Jake. Doesn't look good. Yeah, we're back in ops. Kira gets her phaser, decides to use her weapon because the doors are still locked. I love how she points the weapon at Bashir, who's standing working on a panel, and she says, "Out of the way," or "Move," or something, or maybe she just says, "Doctor," and he's got a gun pointed at him. And then he takes two steps. He's right there. If someone were firing a real gun in real life, I would not want that gun pointed at me. I didn't buy that moment.
Just a lack of Jeopardy. Actors are not playing Jeopardy. They're
They're not,
just, they're
yeah, he should
just.
be like, "What are you doing? Run, run. If you want
Well, they
comedy
did
in
run out of
this."
the way. They
No,
did run out of the
he
way.
took two steps. He
What?
literally stayed in that little corridor and stepped away from the panel. And then she shot the panel. It
But there were other people standing at the panel that hightailed it. They ran. There were other
One of the people actors. That eventually will get, yes, one of the background actors, they hightailed it. But
are you
not
talking
the doctor.
In this moment?
Okay, wait, hold on, Robbie. Are we in the wrong place? Is this where she shoots the panel to knock the life support out? Yeah.
Yes.
No, yeah. Not life support, to try to get out the door.
Get the door.
Oh, no.
She tries to get out the door.
The life support when people run.
When people run.
Okay. Yeah. This
one. And that
one,
was funny.
Right.
That's what Bashir should have done in this moment. He should have run. He should have been like,
Or he just stepped a couple steps because he realized that on DS9, characters are able to dodge phasers. We've already seen that. O'Brien do it. We've seen Sisko just do a little quick turn.
True.
They're all like they're on the Matrix. They're so at just dodging phasers. It's unbelievable. So maybe that's what was going through Bashir's mind. He's like, I'm totally safe because everyone has dodged.
Because I can dodge this.
I can dodge it very easily.
Because I'm a series regular on the Star Trek show.
I will be able to dodge this one.
That weapon can't possibly hurt me. Anyway, she blows up the little panel. They do manually open the door, but there's a force field. I love how Nana sort of walks through the door and boom, falls back. That was funny. There's a lot of little funny moments for sure. Can't get out. Dax goes down into the pit to try to wipe the security program from the computer. Bashir's bummed because he says, I was just starting to feel like at home here, which I liked. I liked that little comment. And Kira tells Bashir, the Cardassians built this place. Don't forget it. So Dax is going to work in the pit. I always like when they go down in the pit. There's good shots down there, up and down, and it's a good part of the set.
We are back in the security office
with
Quark and Odo. A very funny interaction because Quark is now sort of asking Odo, you're a shapeshifter. Why don't you change shapes and get us out of here? And basically Odo says, it's not going to work. There are force fields on top of force fields. I can get through one part, but then I'm going to get stopped. I get blocked. There's no way that I can shapeshift into anything that can get us out of here.
I liked Armin when he said, when you said, you're a shapeshifter. Oh, excuse me, a changeling.
Changeling.
Right. I loved that reminder that Odo, we know more about Odo now, and he's not, not our word for him. He is their word. Changeling is the right word.
I thought it was good writing because it seemed to me that that would be the obvious next move, that he could shapeshift and get underneath or through the door somehow or go into the ventilation system or something.
Right.
Yeah.
And they closed that door on you. And I thought, oh, that's good. That's good.
Smart. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, I like this episode because of all the doors that keep a door opens briefly and it just gets slammed shut over and over and over again. So to me, lots of hurdles and a lot of drama happening.
Okay, the door closed, and you're absolutely right, Garrett. Mm. But and my dear friend, one of the consummate actors who I ever worked with, René Auberjonois, doesn't seem at all perturbed that he can't get out.
Yeah,
that's true. That's very true. He's quite content. He's quite okay with it, isn't he?
Yeah. Mm. Maybe the threat hasn't materialized yet. Maybe the idea that the ship is going to blow up hasn't materialized yet, so there's no reason for him to be concerned, maybe. But again, even René was not playing the Jeopardy.
But also, can I just
Neither was I, for that matter.
But if there was neurocene gas released in the security office, I don't think Odo would perish from that. Am I right? I mean, he doesn't breathe the air. But if you think about it, he does not eat. He does not drink. So he's liquid.
Maybe he doesn't breathe.
Yeah. I don't think he breathes. He only regenerates in a liquid state every 16 hours. That's it. So
there's a future episode where we're out in a snow-covered mountain. We should see if there's breath coming out of his mouth.
Oh, that would be interesting. Yeah.
Then we would catch it. Okay.
Or if we ever notice, as we're watching an episode, if René, the actor, has a reaction where he goes, then he breathes.
Or if he goes like that,
or
then we
coughs. Yes. Or sneezes or anything.
He sneezes
respiratory. We're going to be on the lookout for that now. Very funny.
Okay. Right.
We go back to the or loading bay area. They're using this cart to ram into the door.
Okay. It was cool, but to me, it was like, wait a minute, is this cart on a track? Why
it is
it moving
track,
so?
Yeah.
So they're just using the track that's already in place to run that thing in? Is that what it was?
I thought it was on a track, like in a mining tunnel,
yeah.
It would be on a
trolley.
Track. Like,
all right, if it's all a right. Trolley, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it
were
was
they,
on a track.
Were they exerting themselves? No.
It didn't seem that heavy.
No.
No. But they're slamming it. Doesn't work. Cisco wonders if the iridium might work because it's very unstable. Mm-hmm. O'Brien says, well, we'd need a strong electrical charge to have it react, but I don't have any tools. Yeah. Cisco breaks with his superpower strength, breaks a handle off of this alien metal mining trolley, breaks the handle off, and tosses it to Miles. Here's your tools. Go to work.
How nice. Forgive me. I need to go back to the scene with Odo and Quark.
Yes, do.
Yeah. In my script that I have here in front of me,
yes.
And I don't remember if this is in the version that we see on TV.
Uh-huh.
It says civilians. That's all it says is civilians. Help us. What's going on? The turbo lifts aren't working. There's no way off the promenade. What are we supposed to do? Odo says, stay calm, find a comfortable spot, remain there, try not to move around. Help is on the way. Does this happen in the episode? I don't remember.
No.
The civilians say, when? How long is it going to take? Can't you get out of there? Let us in. Quark says, didn't you hear them? Quark's talking to the crowd. Didn't you hear them? Go sit down. We've got problems of our own. Go on, move it. There was a scene where I sort of heard the voice of the other people on
the
station.
Of the other people. Yeah. I wish that was filmed.
Yeah. Well, it was written, but it wasn't filmed.
Wow.
Now that's a shame.
That's
white pages. God knows when the blue pages and the purple pages and the coral.
Yeah, they may have not even filmed it and just cut it from the script and never filmed it. Wow. Yeah, I would have liked that. I would have liked that a lot. Mm-hmm.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, yes. Yeah, so the battering ram, they're using this trolley.
Mm-hmm. Cisco is superhuman. He breaks it off.
Yeah.
But, you know, in times of stress, they've proven that sometimes you can get superhuman strength when you're extremely stressed.
In times of stress, that means he'd have to be stressed.
He'd have to be stressed.
Okay. The circumstances are very stressful. Whether or not they're played by the actors, that's another thing. But yeah, it's still stressful
enough.
On the inside,
he was very stressed out.
Yes,
he just didn't want
to.
Didn't want to show Jake. He didn't want his son to be nervous.
Now, exactly. No. Where in the scene is he worried about his son?
He does have a little bit.
He's got
a
not in this scene.
Not in this one. This earlier scene.
Yes, in the earlier scene.
Remember when
he's got
when
some moments
Jake
and he
goes,
does
Jake hurts Jake bumps into something, right? And he's like, "Ow!" And he's like, "Son, are you everything okay there?" Like he is kind of concerned there.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, but again, and he's, you know, Jake keeps volunteering for things, his father kept saying, no, you can't do that. And then being convinced that, yes, you should do that. I just, I'm now I'm nitpicking. I'm so sorry. That's enough. Let's move on. Let's move on.
No, but I, okay. There's an opportunity to really have an emotional, like to see his concern. I can't lose you too, son. Or, you know, there could have been moments that were emotionally based rather than intellectually based. There was a lot of focus in this story on plot movement and how computers work. And it just, yeah, it didn't grab me emotionally. Didn't grab me. What happens next, Garrett, in Ops? We go to Ops.
I don't even know. Where are we?
Dex gets secondary burns on her hands.
Yeah, she triggers this explosion inside the pit. Down in the pit.
Yeah.
Explosion. Which is okay. That's good. That's Jeopardy.
Yes.
Yeah. That's good. And a credit to Terry. She played the burns.
She played the
She
pain.
Did. So yep. She's the one person who played Jeopardy. So far,
she was really playing that. Yeah, the physical pain. Dukat comes on the monitor again, says if the Bajorans don't surrender in 5 minutes, they're going to pump neurosine gas into Ops. No,
not Ops.
They're gonna habitat ring, right?
The entire living
families.
Exactly.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Think of your families as you consider your course of action. You know what? He almost sounds like, who's the guy that, oh my gosh, Phil Hartman. That's kind of what Dukat sounds like to me in a way. You know what I'm saying?
That's
Phil
funny.
Hartman's voice, right? Yeah.
That's very funny.
And credit to the Kira character. She says, there must be something we can do. We can't just sit here and let those people die. Okay, good.
Great. That helps. Yeah.
And now we know there's hundreds of people in their quarters, hundreds in the habitat ring.
And they're all trapped too, right? These force fields have gone up everywhere.
The turbo lifts don't work, right?
Yeah. Right. Nothing's working.
Well, just
Garrick
after
shows.
after this message, Garrick shows. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Garrick shows up. He has a code to enter, but he says it only works when he passes through.
Mm-hmm.
So Garrick arrives to help them. He's got a code to come into the Ops.
Right.
But we see it go off and come right back on. So it only works for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And it only works at that level because Dukat didn't trust him with any more codes, any higher level codes.
Right.
So Garrick suggests destroying the life support system to save them. Mm-hmm. The neurosine gas that would be pumped in would go through the life support system. So if you destroy it, they won't be able to poison them.
Correct.
And this is when Kira turns around towards those background actors and points her gun again at people. But this time they do run.
Does she say get down? Is that what she said? So get down.
Yeah, get down.
That means like duck is what that means. But they ran out. They like scampered.
Yeah.
Get out of there. Is that her normal weapon? I feel like the Bajoran weapon is a different looking weapon.
It is a different, and that was a different, that is a Bajoran weapon. And it's different from the Starfleet weapon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But
it's bigger.
It also looks different from the other Bajoran phasers that I've seen, which are a little more slender looking and curved. This was a very boxy looking, tase gun looking thing. So,
It's in my script. It says this time the beam is bigger and more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And the console explodes.
She takes out life support, destroys the life support computer, and then Dukat's video pops up again. He says, looks like the station has been overtaken. He initiates a self-destruct sequence that has, they have 2 hours left. That's it.
Yeah. I also like the line on that Dukat has, in all likelihood, I am dead or otherwise incapacitated. So it's just like, yes. Just again, I loved Dukat in this.
And we are supposed to feel a tiny bit sorry for Dukat that he's been incapacitated.
Poor Dukat. Back in the security office, Quark is standing there firing a phaser at the door. Odo steps in and takes it away from him.
Yeah.
Quark is very depressed. He feels like a failure. Odo says something nice to him. He says, you may not be the richest, but you are the most devious Ferengi I've ever met. And Quark is very touched by this moment. I love that. Yeah, I like this runner with you guys that's going on. It's good for the characters, you know.
Yeah, it's a little longer than usual than we usually have, and
Yeah.
I've for one appreciated that a great deal. And I get to say the 75th rule of acquisition. Home is where the heart is, but the stars are made of latinum.
Home is where the heart is. Yes.
I do feel like this is the first time that Odo has actually shown
Said something nice.
compassion
Yeah.
for Quark, I guess, or empathy or friendliness towards Quark. I feel like this is a they've turned a corner in
Yeah,
this
yeah. This
episode.
is what I said earlier, is that there's a development in our relationship
Yep.
in this episode, which I was very happy about when we were shooting it.
Yeah. And again, the comedy that's interlaced in these scenes between the two of you, like these little last little buttons of these last lines, you know, the very end of this scene, Quark says, oh, well, that means a lot to me. Now, can I have the phaser back? And Odo's like, no.
No.
Just like, nah, you're not
Like
going to
one
keep the
step
fire.
forward, two steps back.
Yes.
Armin, I have a question for you. When you were watching this, when I first saw Quark in this episode, it looked to me like the sculpting on your makeup was a slightly different than I'd noticed. Did you notice any difference?
No, I didn't. I don't remember them ever saying to me, "We're changing your makeup." They changed Odo's makeup during the course of the show, but I don't. They might have done it, and they just didn't tell me. But which
It
is
might
hard
have
to
been the
believe.
shadows or
Might have been
lighting
the
or
shadow.
something.
Yeah,
It was.
and again, let us remember, Jonathan West is the new DP, and it might indeed been the lighting.
Yeah. Did it looked a little? Some of the wrinkles in the cheeks and things seemed a little deeper, a little more pronounced than I'd noticed before. But it might have just been lighting.
Armin, I have a follow-up question for you. In the time that you worked on DS9, was there ever a day where Karen Westerfield was sick with
Sick or
mono or
something.
something where she
Yes.
was not?
There were
Okay.
about 2 or 3 days during the course of 7 years that Karen was sick or something.
How was that?
Now, how was that
Odd.
makeup application
Very odd.
when those people filled in for her those 3 or 4 times? Could you tell the difference in makeup application? Like, that is not a Karen Westerfield application, right?
Yes. Yes.
And okay. Did it?
I did. I would say, no, that's you have to do that over again.
Oh, so
You
you
need
made
to.
them redo it
Yeah,
then. Okay.
you have to fix that. That does because of that. I mean, that's all I did for the first 2.5 years of staring in the mirror.
Yeah, you knew everything.
So and I didn't always pay attention, but I was facing the mirror constantly, so I could tell when things were slightly off, and
Yeah.
I could help with them. Although I'm sure they had pictures too, and I'm sure Michael had told them things as well.
Okay. Cool.
But I
Interesting.
yes, there were times, about
Yeah.
three maybe, I think altogether.
Like for you, Robbie, did you feel like that too when someone else did it other than your normal, that they weren't as good or they did it
I mean,
differently?
mine was not complicated, and
Yeah. Yours
I'm a
was.
human. The hardest thing on me was putting
The sideburns
the
on.
fake sideburns on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
We go to ops next. Garrick has got the station working. Not Garrett Wong, but Garrick. Is he's got things working, but he says his code only allows him to look around. He can't actually do anything
Yeah.
about this emergency situation. Dax suggests maybe he can fool the computer into thinking that he's Dukat. Garrick says the computer's going to scan for Dukat's DNA, and Dax says maybe we can take the sensors offline so it can't scan. And Bashir sort of smiles while Garrick is working, which I like this little moment. He thinks that Garrick reprogramming this Cardassian security system is awesome. He seems very happy about that. So
Yeah.
I liked that tracking that.
And one of the things to add to that is one, the brilliance of Dax. Dax is arguably the smartest person on the station. But two, something we haven't talked about that is essential to this whole episode is teamwork. They are working as a team, and they are bouncing ideas off of each other and finding remedies because of the teamwork they're doing together. And that is Star Trek at its best, is the idea that individually you are alone, but if you work as a team, you can come up with a resolution. You can find a way out.
Yes, I like that theme. I don't know that I got that theme
It's the
until.
only theme that I see in this episode. Yeah.
And I gotta say, Dax is the winner of most technobabble in this
Yeah,
episode.
she's got a lot of
She comes,
technobabble.
Yeah, because she keeps coming up with suggestions, which then the door gets closed on her as well, being the science officer. Over and over again, she's trying to find the science answer. And
well, she's working hard here to shut down the life support or the sensor, DNA sensor, whatever. Garrick says, how much time do you need till you're done? Dax says, I got 10 more minutes till I can get this, you know, the sensors shut down. And Garrick says he doesn't have enough time. That's when a computer alarm goes off. The computer thinks there's a counter or there's an insurgency going on. So it initiates a counterinsurgency program level 4. So these levels keep going up every time from the very beginning. And that's when this automated weapon starts firing in the replicator, vaporizes our poor red shirt. That's our only death, though, that we witness here.
It's also it's super cool if you think about this. It's a weapon that gets replicated in the replicator and starts shooting from the replicator. It's like, what? Who does that? Nobody. We've never had seen anything like that on Voyager.
You could just replicate. It's like
such a Cardassian thing to do.
Those 3D printers that make those ghost guns or whatever.
Ghost guns. Yeah.
It's like that.
And it's fascinating that it was programmed to be on. To be shooting, not to be turned on, but was on the moment it appears.
The moment it appears, it starts shooting.
That's good, clever writing.
It's good, although my problem was it's just shooting like randomly. It feels like randomly. And even though people are hiding from it, it continues shooting, destroying the Cardassians' ops station. It's you know, taking out systems left and right constantly. It didn't seem like a smart weapon to me.
And what is Kira standing next to protect herself? It's some sort of beam, right?
Some sort of beam, yeah.
A bulkhead or something.
Now, why isn't that disintegrated?
Okay.
Well, this place should be blowing up. There should be fire. It should be collapsing. This weapon just keeps going.
I know you thought it was completely indiscriminate, Robbie, but I do feel, I mean, he does mention Dukat when he beams in. He talks about how this beam it's trained on anyone who isn't Cardassian. And it's probably all going off of movement and also sensing other things in the air. I don't know. So I think it was shooting where it was supposed to shoot. I just didn't think it was just randomly going.
It felt random to me.
Yeah, I can see your point.
I could see both sides. I mean, the logic makes sense that it would only be looking for life signs.
Right.
But it didn't feel that way.
Got it.
Felt like it was just.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
And you're right. There should have been more chaos in the room because of these. It disintegrated. It didn't kill. It disintegrated the poor red shirt who was shot.
You're right. After that vaporization, I would think that everyone would be screaming their heads off at that point. You just saw Bill get vaporized, right?
Yes.
So,
yes.
And did not anyone have an affinity for Bill? Did anyone say, "Oh my God, so and so"? Nothing. Oh yeah, no. When the red shirts died.
Clearly, Bill was the jerk of ops. I mean, they didn't like him. The one that the guy that he stole everyone's lunch that was in the fridge in the work. You know,
and yet he was not a Ferengi.
He was not a Ferengi, exactly.
I think he would always eat Kira's yogurt.
That's what it was.
Kira's yogurt. That's all Renee could eat was yogurt.
We talked about that. Yes.
That's right. We're back in the ore loading bay. They do pry open the panel. Miles, with his makeshift tool, pries open the power cable panel. They decide they need to pack the iridium around the door. Quick scene in there. We're back in ops. People are hiding under desks and pillars. It's chaos. Everybody's hiding from these shots. When suddenly Dukat beams in, the real Dukat. He seems very relaxed when he arrives and very happy. He's all smiles. He's enjoying this. He got a distress signal from himself, he says. Got a message from himself. The message was someone tried to duplicate his command code. And he sees the auto-destruct has started. And he says, I will turn it off. I can turn it off after we discuss a few things. And he's taking his time. He goes over to the replicator, orders some red leaf tea. The weapon disappears and the tea shows up.
But then once he takes it, doesn't the weapon come back in and keep shooting?
Yeah, the weapon comes back in. returns to firing.
Oh my goodness.
That's when Garak, who's been hiding, Garak realizes, oh, this is only targeting non-Cardassians.
Yeah.
So he stands up, and then he and Dukat get into this little Bickerstein argument
Oh my
about his
God.
father. Yes.
It's just crazy. And
Dukat's
one of the
father,
lines that
and
Dukat has, he
yeah.
addresses Garak. He says, "Ah, Garak groveling in a corner. That makes my trip worthwhile."
Yeah.
Now, yes, Andy's in a corner. Yes, he's sitting on his butt. Yes, but I would not call that groveling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So even Andy is not playing Andy, the consummate actor. Even Andy is
It's
not
not
playing
playing,
the
I'm gonna
Jeopardy.
die,
The
I'm gonna
peril.
die.
The
Yeah.
peril is not being played.
They kind of bicker back and forth, which I think was intended to be, it was fun to watch, but not quite achieving funny. And part of it was pace to me. I feel like some of those exchanges just needed some pace.
And doesn't really make sense when people are dying. And maybe pace would have helped it. It's just like, oh yeah, we'll have our regular dialogue while all these beams are
Exactly. It
flashing
felt like
around.
this relaxed kind of retread of their personal issues that didn't seem to have urgency to it or comedy pacing to it, either one. It needed one or the other.
And now that I think of it, once Descartes shuts off the weapon, he says, "You can all rise now. You're safe for the moment, Major." And there was no exhalation of breath by anybody that, "Whoo, we're fine. Thank God, our savior, Descartes. We're not going to get vaporized." There was none of that. It was literally, "You're all safe. They were safe before. You said you're safe now, Major," in a way. So I'm kind of coming to your side a little bit, both of you.
Don't come too far. It's not a
I won't
fun
come too
side.
far. I won't.
Stay on the
No,
fun side
I'll
of
stay
fun
on the fun side.
side. Yeah, so he turns it off. Kira goes and joins him in the commander's office where he sits in her, in Sisko's chair. And first thing he does is knock the baseball off the table.
Yes.
How
I want to see if my
disrespectful.
script goes that
Yeah.
far, if that's scripted. Oh my gosh. But Robbie, do you have the actual shooting script on the, can you
I
please
do.
pull
I
that up and see if
do.
that was a script direction?
I liked that bit of
Yeah,
business. I
if
thought
that
it was
little
good.
bit of Samuel French business was really done by him, I'm pretty impressed
Yeah.
too. But I almost feel that that was written in. My It's script doesn't so go that far. okay. Robbie has
Mine
the actual
does. I
shooting
just
script.
gotta.
I feel
So it
like
says
it's so
here.
specific.
Yeah. So after we leave the main body of ops, it
Yeah.
says interior commander's office, continuous. Dukat and Kira enter. Dukat sits down at the desk, picks up the baseball, glances at it, and then tosses it onto the floor. He looks appraisingly at Kira. So it says that he sort of picks it up, studies it, and then tosses it. What he did was just disrespectfully flick it away.
Flick it
I think it was
off.
better
Yeah,
what he,
the way he did
absolutely
it, sure.
better. Yeah. But they basically have a conversation where he demands, he wants to be allowed to reestablish Cardassian troops on the station in exchange for saving the station and cutting this thing off. And Kira's like, that's never going to happen. Then he explains, well, there's 2,000 people that are going to die if you don't accept my demands. And he said, I'll leave you to think about it for about 30 minutes. That's about what's left of the self-destruct sequence.
Yeah. So he says he's going to actually beam back to his ship to let them decide. So 30 minutes is left. So he says, "I'll show back up in, let's say, about 25 minutes and see how you're faring at that point, right?" But right when he tries to beam off, now and another alarm comes on. So this is what I love so much about this episode, because you did not expect this to happen
No.
to Descartes,
But
the
before we get
one.
there,
Yes.
before, sorry to stop
Go
you
back. Go back.
mid-sentence.
Yes, please.
So he says, thousands of people will die. And she says, we're never going to let that happen, Dukat. And where does she get off making that godlike rule that rather, in order not to give in, that she's going to sacrifice thousands of lives? Where does she get off having that That's a
decision and not even thinking about it? Not really.
I didn't see anything cross Nana's face that said, "Oh my God, that's a jeopardy for all these people that I've come to live with and work with." Nothing. No, I'm not going to give you what you want to cut. And I thought, really? That is so anti-Star Trek. I don't know what is.
Yeah, she
Well,
says, either
she's
way, I
Bajoran.
will.
She's, you know.
She says, let me, she says to him, let me put this another way. I will destroy this station before I ever give it back to the Cardassians.
Right.
2,000 people.
And I understand the problem, but it should have been a problem. It should have been a problem for her to say, I have to think about, good, I'll give you a half an hour to think about it. Great. But it, no, you're not going to do it. We'd rather all die here. We're going to be the Alamo. We're going to all die here rather than give you this property.
I
Wrong. That's
agree. It
wrong.
yeah, I agree. It seemed very cavalier. Seemed very cavalier. Well, yeah, Dukat's stuck here. He tries to beam off the station and the alarm comes on and Kel appears
Oh my God, this is great.
and says Dukat tried to abandon his post. That's what the computer analyzed. The computer really is not very smart in this episode.
No.
It thinks there's Bajoran rebellions. It thinks Dukat's abandoned. It's misinterpreting all of its information,
Oh my
this
God.
computer.
You have lost control of Terek Nor, disgracing yourself in Cardassia. Your attempt to escape is no doubt a final act of cowardice. All fail-safes have been eliminated. Your personal access codes have been rescinded. The destruct sequence can no longer be halted. All you can do now is contemplate the depth of your disgrace and try to die like a Cardassian. That final sentence is the best. Come on. Contemplate the depth of your disgrace and try to die like a Cardassian.
I did like the way this was staged with Dukat in this kind of dominant status position. He was sort of up high in the frame, and everyone else is gathered around in the room. And he seems to be thinking very highly of himself in that moment he's about to beam out. And then he's completely embarrassed there, which I like the staging of that.
And I like the turn. I like this turn, which I didn't see coming at all. And I love the fact that, oh, you're stuck here too, Dukat. I really love it. I thought that was excellent choice by the writers.
Very smart. We come back after commercial break, back into ops. This is the highest, widest shot I've seen of this set, I think, to open this scene. It seemed like the camera was way up in the roof of the
The
stage of this.
rafters.
It did. It was a beautiful angle. I don't think I'd ever seen it before. But we learn in the scene, Dukat can't stop the self-destruct sequence. He and Garak start bickering again.
Eric, even your own computer program turns against you. The bickering is hilarious. It really is.
It's very funny. Kira asks about the self-destruct, and he says the way it works is the core stabilizers will shut down to the energy core for the station, and it'll destabilize the core, and the core will explode, basically, or just overload. And that's going to destroy the station.
And no
And
one seems worried.
no. Mm-mm. They're all just kind of gathered around the circle, taking it in. Yeah, there should have been a lot more. We're
I was
getting,
worried.
I don't know where we are in the act structure, but at this point in your classical three act structure, you should be at the climactic kind of levels. This is the final, the final stretch here. It should be the worst. This should be the all is lost moment kind of thing.
The final countdown, were you
It
going to
should
say?
be. Yeah, we should be
Okay.
getting there now. Because Dukat can't, he says, I can't shut it down. But Dax does say we could manually shut it down on level four. We just can't get there because of all these force fields. And they decide, well, we can't, there's no way we can shut down one force field at a time. We've got to shut them all down at one time. That's the only way we can get to level 34 to shut this off in time. They're going to have to figure out a solution to that.
What if they had shut down the force field around the security office, which would have allowed Odo to have gotten out?
Then maybe Odo could have
Changed into some type of form.
shapeshifted into something. Yeah.
That would have been good.
But they wanted you guys stuck in that room together
They
for as
did,
the
and I
comedy
was grateful for it.
duo. You probably worked one day on this episode. You probably came in and did all these scenes in a day, would be my guess.
I think so,
Yeah. Well, we're back in the ore loading bay. They finally finish, Cisco and his team, Jake and Miles. They're stacking all of this rocks. There must have been 30 or 40, 50 rocks they're stacking around the door. Miles pulls this cool electrical cable that's got like, it looks like an LED, rope with lights just coming all through it. It was very cool. Kind of want that electrical cable in my house. I wish my extension cords did that when I plugged them in. They just kind of lit up all across. That would be
I
nice.
have a charging cord for my one of my phones, and it is a little LED.
It lights up?
Yeah,
Oh,
it
it
lights
lights up,
up.
really?
Yeah.
So
Oh, cool.
power's going through too. Yeah,
Oh,
a lot
that's
of fun.
cool. Well, Cisco does the honors. He touches the lighting, the
Fuse.
electrical cable, yeah, to the dirt on the floor. I guess they crumbled up some of this ore to be like a fuse. And so it, I wrote down Roadrunner style. It looks like the old Roadrunner, it's going across. And just like in the Roadrunner, it explodes. But here's my problem. When it explodes and we see the shot, they must have put 50 rocks around this door. It looked like maybe one or two of the rocks. They even said, don't put too many rocks because it could blow up the whole station. Why did only one or two of them? Why did they have to put 50 if only one or two are enough to do it? Why didn't they just put two or three rocks there instead of 50 that are clearly untouched when the door explodes? I didn't like that moment. Okay, so it works. A hole in the door. Back to ops. Dukat brags he's going to solve this with his superior Cardassian mind.
Now,
I love it.
so
Yes.
in that, when they blow up the rocks,
Yes.
so they blow a hole in the doorway, and my
Yeah.
notes are, why isn't there a force field around that door?
Especially if that's where the rebellion began. That
We're
would be the
close to it because they're
most.
in a different room, actually,
Yeah.
but yes. But why isn't it, if there are force fields all over the station, that's what we've been told. Why isn't there a force field there? Yes, they blowed a hole in the door, and we've
Yeah.
seen Kira blow up other things, and there's force fields there.
I'm
Why
glad
is
I'm not
there
the only nitpicker
not
here.
a force field there? Go
Because
ahead,
that
Garrett.
specific type of rock, when it explodes, it disables the force field. That's clearly the reason
I
why.
see.
They
Okay.
should have
Why you needed
grabbed
50
a bunch of
rocks there?
rocks. They should have grabbed a bunch of rocks with them then.
Taking
And
it with
Miles
them?
should keep that little handle tool because they're going to need it for all the other doors they got to go through.
All right.
Anyway, back in ops, Dukat is bragging how he's going to solve this problem with his superior Cardassian mind, telling Kira all of this. And Garak says something about, you're not going to impress Kira with all this bragging. That
Yeah.
seemed odd to me. And he says, you're a married man. And it just seemed like an odd exchange. Like, was he really flirting with Kira? It didn't feel that way to me.
No, he
That didn't
they've
bother
t
me at all.
it didn't
Oh, it
bother me because
didn't?
they've touched on this before, Robbie. They have. There's been a little bit of
Oh,
that, I feel
really?
like. Yeah, in a
Okay.
prior episode. Let me just read. There is a little thing that I could read about this. Hold on, where is it? Da -da 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 -da. Oh yeah, maybe there wasn't anything like that before. Okay, so it says this is the first episode where we see Dukat express a desire for Kira, something that would return many times in the future, perhaps seen at its most forceful in the fourth season episode, Return to Grace, and sixth season episode, A Time to Stand. So this theme keeps happening over and
Comes
over again.
up. Is
In
this the
this,
first time?
yeah, that's
This
what
the
I guess
first
that they're
time?
saying. I'm
It
mistaken. I thought we saw something of this before, but maybe I'm wrong.
may be the first time scripted,
Scripted. Okay.
but I would venture to say Mark's been playing this for a while.
Okay.
But it says in this episode, however, his attempt to impress her is treated humorously, something which displeased Nana Visitor. According to Visitor, I would have liked my character to make the point that only a few years earlier, Dukat's wanting me would have meant that he could have had me, and I wouldn't have been able to do a thing about it. So it shouldn't have been seen as a cute moment. It was actually a horrifying moment, one that would make Kira feel disgust and panic. To Kira, Dukat is Hitler. She's not ever going to get over that. She can never forgive him, and that is important to me. Kira may have started to see Cardassians as individuals, but she will always hate Dukat.
Well, that's a good point. It's a very fair point.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Garrick tells Dukat, stop flirting. You're a married man.
After Garrick says you're a married man, Dukat comes back with, I should have had you executed years ago, which is like, what's going on between these two?
Yeah, we've never seen quite this level of backstory between these two at all. Not at all.
We also have some backstory in an earlier part of the episode where Garrick talks about Dukat's father's trial, where he was convicted of being a traitor. And that, too, is backstory that we've never had before.
No. Yeah, exactly. Mm-mm. Yeah, it's interesting. These kind of little Easter eggs or whatever, they're interesting details that I hope get explored more in the future.
Yeah.
Dax, the smartest one in the room, says if we overload the grid, maybe it could short out all the force fields. And Dukat asks Kira if they took the neutralization emitters offline. She says, yep, we shut those down. And Dukat's very happy about this because if they were shut down, they weren't affected by this security program. So maybe, you know, Dukat and Dax's idea combined to use these neutralization emitters with her idea of overloading the power grid maybe could disrupt all of these force fields that are stopping people from solving this problem. So Dax says she can bring on these neutralization emitters, bring them back online, and make that work. So it looks like they're going to give it a try. They have a plan. Yeah, back in the corridor with Sisko, O'Brien, and Jake. They must have been looking separately because they meet up at a junction. You see them sort of at the end of the hallway. And O'Brien says he could only get a couple hundred meters before he was stopped by a force field. Jake says the same thing, couldn't even get that far. That's when Sisko says, oh, what about a turbolift shaft? Maybe if we can get manually pull this door open, we could climb up the shaft and get back to ops. So that's what they start to do. The old elevator shaft trick. Seen that one in the action movies.
I'm just thinking what Odo says to Quark. He said, the force field's not just in one place. It goes up and down the station. It goes.
He said it's in the bulkheads. He said it's even in the force fields go through the bulkheads.
Yeah. So from the information that we've gotten from Odo, they shouldn't be able to go up and down the turbolift shafts.
No. Well, I mean, if they're this way, maybe they can. If they're not this way, right? Maybe. They're saying they just run north and south, right?
I suppose. Okay.
I suppose I agree with Armin. Like it was implied by Odo that these force fields don't just shut doors. They go through the ceiling. They go through the air vents. They go through because Odo could go through a crack. He could become liquid or gas almost. I mean, you know, so he's saying, I can't even, there is nowhere to go. And yet O'Brien in this scene says, oh, I got a couple hundred meters and ran into, like, he got a long ways. So it's another bump for me, but anyway, we go back to ops. Dukat connects the emitters. There's a big rumble.
Again, teamwork. Now it's interesting. Even the Cardassian Hitler is working with the team. It's part teamwork. Team.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Big rumble, rumble, bang, shutter, shutter, and then silence. And Kira tries her comm and it works.
Woohoo! She
calls Sisko, fills him in on the main reactor overloading and destroying the entire station. So she fills him in very quickly on how the whole place is going to blow up. Kira tells Sisko the only way to stop it is on level 34. Sisko says, maybe I can get there in time. Tells her to start evacuating the station. So another reference to all these thousands of people.
Yeah, on what? On a runabout? There are two ships. On a runabout?
I was thinking like, wait a minute. How's that going to work?
How's that going to work? And who's going to pilot the runabouts?
Yeah.
But more importantly, remember that episode where they could only get eight people aboard in a runabout?
Yeah.
Okay. You're going to put thousands of people,
Do you remember? Okay, you guys know, like when the Peking Opera acrobats are performing, there's this one thing where there's one person on a bike with like 50 people sit on the same bike and they're
Oh
all
yeah,
right.
that's right.
And I'm like, okay, that's how it's gonna be. They're gonna get on the runabout and there's gonna be hundreds of people like fanned across the runabout
Yes.
like a Peking Opera
Stacked on
acrobats,
top of each
stacked on
other.
top of people. What?
Well,
Oh
we
no.
go back into the corridor. Sisko wants Jake to go to one of these escape ships. Jake says he's not going to even make it. He wants to go with his dad. And they have a nice moment between them, which I
He
thought
does a
was
little,
sweet.
Cisco does a little face tap on his
Yeah.
son. He's like, "Pap, all right, boy, let's go." Yeah,
Yeah.
let's go, Sonny.
Yeah, it's nice. Jake's getting to see some of the action, which is fun. Back in the security office with Quark and Odo, there are 7 minutes left. Kira calls down to Odo and Quark, says that they're evacuating everything. Odo tells her the door is still sealed to security. And she says, I'll send down a work team as soon as possible. Odo explains to Quark it's probably because they wanted to keep him in, that he might be a security risk. Maybe that's what the Cardassians thought. And Quark says something very nice here to Odo. He says, that's because you're an honorable man.
Yeah.
And there's a very sweet, just for a moment between them. And then Quark's response is, and that's going to get us both killed, which made me laugh.
I hope you're happy.
Yes.
I hope you're happy.
Yeah, that was fun. I don't understand why the Cardassians would think Odo is so much more of a security risk than.
Well, I think he proved not to be he proved to be in the middle, and they couldn't trust him going towards the Bajoran revolution or rebellion
Okay.
than staying with the Cardassian command. So I think, you know, and he could be a very powerful weapon, so they wanted to keep
That
him
keep him locked
encapsulated.
down.
Yeah.
Got it. All right. Well, we're back in another corner with Sisko asking Miles if he upgraded the deflector shield. Could it absorb all of this energy? Miles says, maybe that's not a bad idea. The shields are the only thing on the station that could absorb that much energy. So they head towards the deflector shield controls, I guess, but they run into a bunch of debris in the hallway from that power surge that Dukat had initiated. Things had exploded and the hallway is just completely blocked. So O'Brien says, I know a maintenance conduit, pulls open a hatch, looks inside, there's fire.
Not just fire, but green fire, which is
Green
even worse
fire.
than regular
Yes.
fire. Clearly.
Absolutely. Yes.
Kryptonite fire. Kryptonite
Kryptonite
fire
fire.
is what
Yes.
it is.
But they decide to go in, they rip their shirts, wrap them around their hands because it's going to be so hot.
Okay, this is my only nitpick.
Okay.
After they wrap their hands, I'm like, what about your face?
Yeah.
You better wrap your face too. I think that's a really important part of skin that needs to be covered from green death fire.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
people die of smoke inhalation in fires before they die from being scalded.
Yep. Well, they do it anyway with just a little fabric over their hands. But Sisko tells Jake, you cannot come inside. I mean it this time. You're not going any further. And our ticking clock is down to 3 minutes. Computer says 3 minutes are left.
And this is the only time, in my opinion, in the episode where I see some jeopardy from the actors.
Yeah, it did feel this sequence of climbing through with the fire, dealing with the fire and all, the way that Cullum was reacting to the explosions and getting knocked out in there. Yeah. It felt like an action sequence finally. It
Yeah,
felt like a
yeah,
real action
yeah,
sequence.
yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, they're crawling through. O'Brien is knocked out from these fire, the green fire and explosions. And then we see Sisko get into the reactor control junction, I think is what it's called. He calls back to Miles on his comm, but no answer. He tries some buttons. The computer says 90 seconds. We cut back to Jake. Jake decides to go in and he climbs into the conduit back in the junction. Sisko's flipping rods around. I love his technique, pushing buttons, flipping rods. It's like he knew this system really, really well, which I didn't quite understand. Seems like he would need Miles's help to do this.
Wouldn't it not make sense for Sisko to succumb to the fire and the fumes and O'Brien to be able, because he would be the
Absolutely.
knowledgeable one about that.
Yes.
That would
Absolutely.
have made more sense script. But of course, Sisko is number one on the call sheet. So,
He's got to be the, yeah, he's got to
yeah.
save the day. And he it felt like drumsticks in his hand, like he was flipping those tubes, whatever those things were. I kept picturing like a
Isolinear
drummer.
tubes, I think they're called isolinear tubes.
Yes, those.
But Robbie, I think that Sisko had been studying his book that he had gotten recently, which is Main Fusion Reactor Control for Dummies. So he knew exactly what to do when he was up there touching everything and poking in. He'd already.
It did look very urgent. I mean, at this point, it did look
I like making
urgent.
Armin laugh, Robbie. That's all I care about. I live for this. That's it.
That was very funny.
Okay,
Very
very
funny.
funny. Well, he keeps working. I love Jake dragging Miles away from the green fire. I love Jake the hero, giving him a heroic moment. I did think about the floors of those Jeffries tubes, Garrett. You know, the kinds of, oh, I hated working in those things.
Did they have the
Painful.
same as our? Did you see our little bumpy
It
bump on
looked
theirs
like the
too?
same kind of
Oh, that hard.
grilled kind of, yeah.
Yeah, it was bad.
It hurt your skin.
It did. Your knees.
Sisko works, works, works. Jake pulls O'Brien out of the conduit. O'Brien wakes up. I love this exchange when O'Brien says, "Jake, I thought your father told you to stay out of there." And Jake says, "If you don't tell him, I won't."
Oh, I love
I
that.
love that. Classic teenage kid. But Sisko's going hard when suddenly, bam, the energy discharges from the station. We cut outside to space. We see like lightning, all of this energy shooting up, but it does
Yeah,
feel like this.
plasma ball. You know, one of those plasma
Yes.
balls you buy from Spencer's, whatever. It's like, yep.
Shooting everywhere. But the shields that Miles and Sisko were talking about, those deflector shields seem to be containing it or holding
Absorbing
it.
it. Yeah.
Looks like it's worked. Back in the security office, the door's open. Quark is sitting at Odo's computer terminal. I noticed you were off mic in this shot.
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
The camera was out in the promenade because this is going to be basically the last moment or the last scene where Quark and Odo get released. But you were sitting at the desk, and I don't think they had a microphone near you because you were very off mic at the top of the scene. And then as you move forward, it got much better.
Very funny because Quark is basically sitting at the computer reading a evaluation of him by
Yes.
Odo. Quark reads a self-important con artist who's nowhere near as clever as he thinks he is,
Yeah,
which is just, I just
that's the
love this.
security evaluation.
Yeah.
Very insulting.
Yeah, very much
Very
so.
insulting. Did I tell you, Armin, by the way, I've officially gone to Team Quark?
Oh no, thank you.
Yes, he
I
has.
welcome, 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 welcome.
He's passed from one team to another now.
Yeah,
So
I've moved on from Bashir. I'm Team Quark.
he's still fond
Absolutely.
of Bashir, but he is
No, you
actually
should be fond of Bashir. He does a
waving the
lot of good
team
work.
Quark flag. So
And I will
thank you.
give you a warning that Garak has gotten my attention as well. So I
Garak
could be
should.
moving at some point to Team Garak.
And as I watch these episodes, I've become much more of a fan of Mark Alimos as well.
Oh,
Oh yeah.
great.
I just
Good.
think Mark's doing a very good job. As
Good.
and
Great job.
I'm still in awe of Sir'Rock Lofton. Just in awe.
Agreed. I wish they gave him more to do. That's why I was
And
thrilled
they
he had
will. And they will.
action. He had action in this. The first time I think I've seen him really a part of the action in Jeopardy of an episode.
This final scene is, to me, one of the funniest parts of this entire
Well, it
episode.
should be. It's
Just,
from Casablanca.
So therefore,
Stolen. Yeah, it's
stolen,
stolen from Casablanca.
but
Yeah.
yet still funny. So after he reads that evaluation, Quark says, 2 hours ago, you told me I was the most devious Ferengi you ever met. And that's when Odo says, well, that's when I thought we were going to die. I was just trying to be nice. And then Quark says, well, name one other Ferengi who's more devious than I am. And the list just goes on and on, including Rom.
Yes.
It's just so
He's
good.
like the Grand Nagus. Okay, another name. Damon
Diamond
Tai.
Tai, another one.
No, one you know personally. Okay, your brother Rom. My brother.
Your uncle Friend, your cousin Gala, like everybody is
The
just
one that
being
has the
listed.
moon?
Yeah,
Yes.
the one who has the moon.
That's very funny.
So good.
And that's the end of the episode.
And that's the end of the episode.
Ah.
There you go.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Theme, moral, lesson of this episode. Yes, sir.
My theme is teamwork makes the dream work. That's all I could come up with, the best I could do. But I agree with you. You had mentioned that, Armin, before.
Yeah, that's what Armin said. And I'm going to go with that as well. So it's a trifecta.
Armin, is that your theme?
Yes, of course.
Teamwork. Yeah. Teamwork, teamwork, teamwork. Okay. Yeah. There you
go. We're all the same on that one. The Patreon poll theme/lesson/moral of this episode, as submitted by Katie McCarty, is be careful that your actions don't come back to bite you.
Which Ducat's actions.
Ducat's program, basically, I think.
That's an interesting perspective. Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
You know, we didn't touch on that at all, which is the idea that even Ducat has been betrayed. He's been betrayed by higher ups in Cardassia. Mm-hmm. This has to be the first time that's happened. Ducat has always been the primary villain and the highest level of Cardassia for us, with Garrick sort of sneaking in some ideas every now and then. But this is the first time we actually see Ducat being betrayed by his superiors. And that's novel. That's novel.
Well, thank you, Katie McCarty, for your point of view on actions coming back to bite you.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into this recap and discussion of Civil Defense with Armin. Thank you once again to Armin for co-hosting. Mm-hmm. Yes. And join us next week when we will be recapping and discussing the episode Meridian with Terry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We'll have the lovely Terry with us then. For all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material and our rating of what this episode is. All right, everyone. Bye.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.